Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Sam Cedar. Today on Ring of Fire, John Nichols from The Nation magazine will be here to tell us how the Republican Party went from the party of Lincoln to the party of Ted Cruz. Ian Millhiser from Think Progress will tell us about this week's court decision that could defund Obamacare. And journalist Ali Gharib will give us a rundown on the conflict in Israel. You can follow Ring of Fire on Facebook or on Twitter at Ring of Fire Radio. And you can keep up with the latest progressive news on our website at ringoffireradio.com. And now you can tune in to Ring of Fire every Sunday at noon on Free Speech TV. Also, if you want to help support Ring of Fire, go online to ringoffireradio.com/support to find out how. Remember, your support helps keep us on the air. So, Pap, obviously a tremendous amount of conflict this week. We had the downing of a passenger airline over the past week and a half in Ukraine, in territory that is controlled by Ukrainian rebels. It's unclear exactly what happened, but on its face, it appears that the Ukrainian rebels accidentally shot this plane down. And of course, in Israel and Palestine, we see hundreds of civilians killed, hundreds of Hamas fighters and Israeli, closer to 30 Israeli military personnel killed. Again, we see these conflicts, and maybe not directly in the Middle East at this moment, but in general, of course, this is a big opportunity for the neoliberals to, of course, call for more exploration, less regulation on oil.
Yeah, well, it's oil expansion opportunity. We're already seeing that with, you know, the big talk about Russia now is, gee whiz, we have to punish them, and the way to punish them is to lift the bans on exports. You know, the truth is you listen to all the war pimps criticize Obama and carry over over their approach to diplomacy. It has to reinforce the truth that if Obama really were not the person in charge here, if he weren't in control of American missiles and American military, and we had a Romney presidency and a Republican Senate majority, by this time, I have no doubt, we would be involved with conflict in North Korea, Iran, Syria, possibly even China. I mean, if you listen to what they've been saying, because they simply don't understand this concept of intelligent restraint. Now, add to that the point that you're making, and that is the oil pimps, okay? For the last 6 years, there's been this continuous version of conflict being tied into oil industry expansion, and that's what we're hearing today. You might remember the Republicans have been saying that Russia's invasion of Georgia, if you recall all the way back to Georgia, that showed the need for more American drilling and exports. And the same industry mouthpieces, they told us that, gee whiz, Syrian conflict, that it showed us a need for the Keystone XL expansion and drilling. And so this continues on. I mean, we heard it with Iran. I mean, remember Iran? We needed to invade Iran because the Iranians were going to close the Strait of Hormuz and cut off world oil. It's always that equivalent of oil expansion ties into conflict somehow.
Yeah, I mean, there's a certain sort of analogy you could draw with the Republicans' calls for tax cuts, regardless of what's happening with the economy at any given time. And, you know, to some extent, it's an attempt for the oil industry and to gain some advantage. And other times, I think it's also simply just a way to score political points. I mean, you and I both know the idea that the thing that's holding back the exportation of natural gas to Europe being regulations is simply a joke. I mean, the cost for refining this stuff and shipping it overseas is prohibitive.
But that's what we're talking. See, that's the talking point we're hearing today is lift America's oil export ban because it's a way to punish Russia. I mean, that's what they're saying. That's what they said last week. But what they don't talk about, Sam, and you and I have talked about it before, is why we have that ban to begin with. 1973, if you remember, no reason for you to remember specifically, but you remember the story, and that is that economists in 73 determined that this we were involved in this unregulated export of American energy. It was created right here in this country, and we're exporting it all over the world, and it created such chaos. It created such a volatile U.S. energy crisis that it almost shut down our whole damn economy.
Right.
So the economists said we have to ban this because we have to be able to predict what our storage capabilities are. For example, that's why we have a national storage capability for oil now, because we're exporting everything. Because if a company could make a dime more shipping it away from the United States, shipping it to some other country, they're going to do that.
That's right. That's right. And of course, at that time it was crude, and it was, back in the 50s, 60s, the United States was the largest producer of oil in the world. Mm-hmm. And but this idea that somehow if we magically lifted constraints on the exportation of natural gas, that it would happen is, of course, a joke. But it gets conflated with other regulations on the oil industry, which, of course, they don't want. I mean, anything that in any way protects U.S. consumers or citizens.
Our security, health, exactly. It's national security. Think of this, Sam. An oil company, if they can make an extra penny, they're going to say, hell with the United States. We're going to ship it to that place we can make the extra penny. And what's going to happen here? Prices are going to rise. Uh-huh. It's going to have a staggering effect on our economy. And that's why we had the ban to begin with. But now the conflict with Russia, you have all the oil pimps saying, gee whiz, we got to do something about this. We got to do away with our ban.
All right. Well, we'll take a break, Pap, and let's talk a little bit about what's happening in Israel and Palestine. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to Ring of Fire. I'm Sam Cedar here with Mike Papantonio. Let's get back to our discussion of the Ring of Fire news of the week. So, Pap, I mean, we touched on, obviously, what's happening in, the Ukraine and its implications as far as the oil industry is concerned. Their response in any situation is less regulation on our industry. It will somehow strengthen this country. Of course, that's a joke. But we should also turn to this conflict that is taking place between Israel and Palestine. And, we are now in a position in large respects, I think, because during the Bush administration, the classic role that the United States had always fulfilled in this conflict was to rein in the more excessive tendencies of the Israeli right in that country. And rather than reining them in, I mean, it's a simple dynamic, right? There is obviously you have the Israeli population and the Israeli body politic desiring to attack when they feel threatened. And then going too far, and the United States would function as a way of pulling back on Israel and providing the Israeli government some form of cover. We need to do this because we're getting pressure from our most important ally. And of course, during the Bush administration, the roles were in some ways reversed. You had the neocons in the Bush administration pushing Israel to go deeper into Lebanon, pushing Israel to have a more aggressive posture, pushing Israel to empower Hamas in many respects. And of course, the Israeli right wanted to do this by unilaterally pulling out of the Gaza Strip and then calling for elections before the Fatah could actually gain a political stronghold on Gaza. And we have seen the results of that policy over the past 7 years. It created a more empowered Hamas. It, in many ways, weakened Fatah. But that began to shift a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And Hamas, which is an organization that really shows very little respect for its own people, the Palestinian body politic in Gaza began to reject Hamas. Politically, they were weakened. A couple of months ago, Hamas all but unilaterally surrendered, if you will, politically speaking, to Fatah. We had, for the first time in many, many years, a united Palestinian people that was led by the Palestinian Authority, which was making overtures that they were ready to enter into serious peace negotiations with the Israelis. And, of course, mm-hmm. the Netanyahu government feared that perhaps more than anything else. And
this story has so many moving parts. If you're Israeli and you have to worry about missiles being lobbed at you out of Gaza, that's no quality of life. So obviously you respond in kind, and you have superior firepower. You know that you can crush them. But then the competing issue is there that you still have to worry about public opinion. In other words, you can't have the Palestinian Hamas become a sympathetic character. And so that's kind of the tough walk here. Now think about this. Now, I'm Italian, for example. So if I had in my history, or the history of my family and predecessors, had they lived through a Holocaust, I would be the most militant little Italian character you've ever seen. I mean, I would be so militant to where my attitude would be never, ever again. Okay? So you have to begin there. This is, you know, Israel, there's you can't name another culture, another country where they have experienced the Holocaust history. All right, you start there. You have to start there. But then you have to say, how do you intelligently go forward with that kind of attitude and still reach a balance in public opinion? How do you do that? How do you be protective of something that's so critical? And that is, this will never, ever happen to me again. We will no ever willingly go down this path again.
Well, yeah.
To me, it's I understand Israel's position here. But, you know, they have to understand that when you see stories about 3,000 casualties and you're going, okay, you know, you beat them back. Okay. It's okay. And so that's where you're seeing... You know, that's where you're seeing this heightened dialogue. We ought to understand there are children, civilians that we have to consider. We would consider them in any other setting.
Right. And look, you know, I mean, we hear Netanyahu and many apologists for, frankly, the brutal response by Israel is, how would you react? How would you react in the United States if rockets were fired? Yes. But of course, you also can turn that on its head and say, how would you react, the United States, if you were occupied or if you were Manhattan and all the bridges and tunnels were closed off? You had 40% unemployment. Those surrounding Connecticut was basically saying, we're literally going to put these people on Manhattan on a diet, and prevented enough calories going into Manhattan. I mean, this is also
who does the most harm to the Israeli effort to try to protect themselves is the real right wing war hawks. They do so much harm. It's these characters out there that as soon as you use the word Israel, maybe Israel needs to think about something. They do so much harm when they're critical of the debate. You have to have the debate. And what it does is it takes people, I've seen it. I've seen people that are, you know, middle of the road on this. They say, well, hell with you. You know, don't dare tell me I can't talk about something. But that's actually happening in this country right now.
Oh, definitely. And look, I say this as a supporter of Israel. I've traveled to Israel several times over my life. I grew up with a Jewish education where Israel was central to that identity. And from a perspective of someone who wants to see Israel exist, What we're seeing is the Israeli government and the Israeli belief that you can somehow mow the lawn, as they call it, that you can continue to oppress these people ad infinitum. It simply cannot work.
And nobody's going to say anything. I mean, isn't that the conversation, Pap,
that on corporate media we could not have?
Imagine you can't even talk about it because some wingnut out there says, oh, wait, you said Israel did something wrong and maybe they should approach this in a different way. Obviously, Israel has a direct interest in protecting themselves because, if nothing else, this is a culture that lived through the Holocaust, but barely. And so I'm telling you, from my standpoint, if it happened to the damn Italians... And I'm Italian-American. By God, I'm going to do everything I can to make sure it doesn't happen again. The harm, though, is the wingnuts out there who says, you may not even talk about this. How dare you even raise this as an issue?
And I'll tell you something. I think, you know, the other big issue is that, you know, we as American citizens are paying for, the weaponry, or at least a fifth or more of the weaponry that's being used here. And ultimately... this support will not continue. It may be a decade or so, mm-hmm. but yeah. I mean, if you look at
young people,
including frankly, the vast majority of Jews too in this country, the support is increasingly coming from the right wing in this country, and their days, as we know, demographically, as we talk about, are numbered. It may not be for 5 years, may not be for 10 years, but the way to existence of Israel in the future is not going to be to periodically go in and slaughter large amounts of civilians. It's simply unsustainable. Mm. Pap, we got to take a break. We'll be back with more news later in the program.
Coming up, John Nichols from The Nation magazine is going to tell us how the Republican Party went from the party of Lincoln to the party of Ted Cruz. Ugh. I'm Mike Papantonio. We'll be right back with more Ring of Fire. I'm Mike Papantonio, and you've been listening to a free sample of Ring of Fire Radio. If you'd like to listen to the full show, subscribe to our weekly podcast at our website at ringoffireradio.com. It's your support that helps keep us on the air.